Okay, does it work in the real world? Well, that's the question we asked ourselves many, many years ago. Let's go back to the early days. This probably predates all of you. You may or may not know of Steve Corson. Steve Corson was one of the strongest men in the NFL when he played for the Pittsburgh Steelers during their Super Bowl victories. But when I met Steve back in 88, he had developed heart failure. He was on the heart transplant list. Here's one of the strongest guy in the NFL in the 70s. To walk up and down of a stair was overwhelming. To take out the garbage was basically a great feat of strength. And so I told Steve, I said, I have a program here. I think we can basically rebuild your heart. And his doctor at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center said, do not give the man basically false hopes. I said, you know, ignore this guy. Well, the bottom line, you know, Steve, you know, as an elite athlete, was very compulsive. He started following the program, and he had an unfortunate, death 2 years ago. He's cutting down a tree in the forest, and to save his dog, he saved the dog, but the tree fell on him. But his, you know, his injection fraction, this is a marker of, you know, cardiovascular performance. Normally, it's about 55. When he's on the heart transplant list, is in the low 20s. That's why he couldn't walk up the stairs. At the time when Steve died, he basically was running marathons. He was running, his ejection fraction was nearly about 60%. You know, just that of an elite athlete. And we often talk about the NFL combines, when these, young studs coming out of college can bench press 225 times, you know, let's say 20 times, or 20 or 30 times. He's routinely doing this about 40 times. And he'd gone from his playing weight of 270 down to his current weight of about 225. And this is why his doctor said, do not give this man false hope. Well, my early days with athletes, actually here in Southern California, with Marv Marinovich, who used to be the strength coach for the Steelers. And I worked with Marv with some of his patients and some of his athletes. And the athletes who had come to work with Marv were elite athletes who had come there during the off season just to maintain their physical fitness. You can detrain in about 3 days' time. So they would go through a very rigorous program with Marv to just maintain their physical fitness from the end of one season to the beginning of the next one. And my first dealings with the NFL was through Garrett Guimont, who's now the current strength coach of the Steelers, and again working with some of his early athletes. And one of my early NBA players was James Donaldson, who after, you know, knee surgery was given, saying might as well quit playing basketball. We got another 2 years out of him in the NBA, plus another 5 years in European leagues. Now, one of the studies we did of Marv early on was taking his athletes. These were either, NBA players or Division I football players, and put them on a strict program. And Marv would run kind of a disciplinarian camp. You know, if you weren't following the program, he'd say, you're out of the camp. I've got your money, but you're out of the camp. And what we did is follow their performance in this 6 week period. And in the 6 week period, their weight increased by 5%. Well, I can do that by going to 31 flavors every day. But their body fat decreased by 21%, and their lean body mass increased by 8%. Now, in the only published study that's ever been done on anabolic steroids in weight and active athletes, in terms of those who are weightlifters, these are exactly the same results you get in a six-week period of giving trained athletes anabolic steroids. But it's one thing to make them stronger, it's make them more functional. And this is the key fact of the CrossFit program. It's about functionality. And now these athletes, again, these are all elite athletes, their shuttle run times, their cardiovascular fitness, their endurance, their overhead power throw, their vertical jump. Again, these are all types of changes that Marvin never seen before. The training had not changed. What had changed was the diet. It made his training far more effective. So by 1992, we had enough, preliminary anecdotal data to go to the Stanford swim teams and say, guys, we want you to basically think about this. Now, in working with the Garrett Guimont and the LA Rams, Garrett had what he called the flip test. He says, Every Tom, Dick, and Harry comes to my weight room and says, I've got the next new thing for athletic performance. So he said, I developed the flip test. You flip me all the data that supports that and the product, and I think it's valid. I'll call you back in 30 days. He says, and frankly, every product that's come through my trainer door, my training room, I basically has failed the flip test. So I flipped Gary the products and all the support, and he called me back 15 days later saying, something's going on here. And I did the same flip test with the Stanford swim coaches. I said, coaches, try this. And they called me back in 3 days saying, something is happening with ourselves. We want to try it on our athletes. I said, well, good, let's be scientific about this. Let's put them in two groups, those who will and those who get the actives and those who get the placebos. He said, are you kidding? Hey, I know it works. I want all my team on it. So, but to be frank, not all the swimmers bought into it. But the ones who bought into it, hook, line, and sinker, were the ones who dominated swimming that year. That's when those swimmers won 7 gold medals in the 92 Olympics. Not bad for one country, pretty good for one university. Especially like Pablo Morales, who had not swum for 3 years. He'd been in law school. He thought it'd be nice to try to make the swim team, and the coach says, he got a very, very slim chance. But he won 2 gold medals. Jenny Thompson set the world's record that year, and again, that the year before, she was okay, but she was a little on the fat side. Then she swam down there and said, she must be on steroids. No, she was on basically a very tightly controlled program. Jeff Rouse set the world's record that year, and including there is Angie Westerkrag. She didn't win a gold medal in the Olympics, but she had tried out in the 1984 Olympics in the 100-meter of butterfly, had finished 6th. She tried out in the 1988 Olympics in the 100-meter butterfly and finished 16th. And now it's 1992. She's a lot older. She has a full-time job as an accountant. She can only, you know, swim one practice a day. And she makes the Olympic team in the 200-yard butterfly. And she, I think she finished 3rd in the Olympics that year, but she came back and then won the 100 and 200 butterfly in the U.S. Nationals, the oldest woman ever to win those. Well, 1996, another Olympics, more athletes, a lot more swimmers. 2002, one of the athletes was Dara Torres. Now, she competed in the 1992 Olympics, but for the next 8 years, she was working as a model. She was, you know, in many of the Billy Banks Tebow commercials. That was her extent of her athletic performance, was, you know, doing the Tebow. And so she came back to Stanford, and they said, Coach, I want to make the Olympic team. Say, fat chance. But they said, you know, if you work real hard and follow the diet, there's an outside chance you can. Well, she won 2 gold medals at the age, age 36. At that time, the oldest ever to win Olympic gold medals in swimming. These are some of our Italian athletes. This is Lorenzo Vismara. Lorenzo was the top sprinter in Italy, but he was getting old. You know, he's breaking down. It's hard to basically keep the fat off the body. He wasn't strong, a lot of inflammation. And the coach was saying, Lorenzo, you know, it could be time to think about getting a job in the real world. So in desperation, he turned to us and said, can you help us? We said, yes, we can. And within about 6 months, he had turned himself around, and in one day, actually one meet, he set 7 national swimming records in Italy. And basically got another 4 years of swimming out of there. Here's my favorite story in the 2000 Olympics was the Italian national basketball team. As you can see, not a very imposing group of athletes. In fact, these guys would be hard-pressed to make any Division II team in America. And they were the laughingstock of Europe. And so, again, they turned to our Italian partner and said, could you help us? I said, yeah, but you have to eat right and take your fish oils. Well, it turned out that they finished 3rd in the European Championships to be able to go to the Olympic Games, a major cause for celebration in Italy. So they're at the Olympic Games, and a week before the Olympic Games start, they're doing an exhibition match against the U.S. Olympic team, the greatest NBA players of all time. Italians beat them by 20 points. And you say, well, those guys, they could barely make the NBA as basically a ball carrier. And in the Olympics, they finished 2nd. They lost to Argentina on the last second of, basket by Gibelli from Argentina. And the Americans finished 3rd. Now, it wasn't their imposing athletic abilities, but they virtually made no mistakes. Why? Because in elite athletic performance, those who basically can maintain mental concentration will make the least mistakes. If you don't make mistakes, you're more likely to win. And this is Valentina Vassali. She was a four-time Olympic champion at age 38 in fencing. If there's ever a reaction sport, it's fencing. Remember I showed you the data that basically complex of discrimination of basically can be improved? That's why she could compete at age 38 and win basically the Olympic championship. Now, when she had won the 2004, I was in Italy, and she had just become pregnant and was going to give birth to her son in June of 2005. And I said, the world championships are coming up in October. After I give birth to my child, do you think I can get back in shape to compete? I said, of course you can. So she gave birth to a healthy child in June. She had gained 40 pounds in the process. So she had 40 pounds to lose between now and October. So she went on a strict zone diet, training 8 hours a day, but consuming about 1,700 calories per day. Mara said, it's not the calories, it's the ATP you produce that's important. Well, bottom line, she won the world's championship. And what about, professional athletes? This is Dean Karnazes. You may not know him, but he's the world's greatest ultra-endurance athlete. He runs ultra-marathons. What are ultra-marathons? 50 miles, 100 miles, 200 miles. He's even run a couple of 300 miles. Now, first of all, does he look like a typical marathon runner? No, he looks good in a pair of running shorts. But, Dean, basically, the reason why he can do these ultra marathons and win all the time, because he makes more ATP than his competitors do. Now, here's Dean's quote here. I've been a personal acquaintance of Dr. Sears for years and was an early adapter of zone nutrition. Well, this seems like Greg talking here. I followed the principles of the zone diet regimen for over a decade and believe that has helped me to perform better and feel better overall. And again, we've done a lot of work with triathletes. We started in the early years, with people like Karen Smyers, who's still a longtime follower, and she was basically in the Hall of Fame, current ones like Becky Lavau or Lisa Bentley or Julie Ertl. Why? Because it gives them an unfair advantage. These are professionals. Their paycheck depends on performing at peak levels. Now, pro golfers like Michelle McGann is interesting. She's a great golfer, but she's also a type 1 diabetic. And for a type 1 diabetic to maintain a mental presence during a golf tournament is a very, very difficult chore. But the zone diet, which was developed for treating diabetes, allows her to compete effectively. And there's also teams like AC Milan through our Italian partners. In Italy or in Europe, you have to report the amount of drugs your team uses. 90% of all drugs are anti-inflammatory drugs because you have inflammation. AC Milan went from using the highest level of anti-inflammatory drugs in Europe to the lowest level in one season. Why? They were switching to an anti-inflammatory diet. And this is one of our cycling teams. This is Garmin's Slipstream. They only started a year ago because of tremendous doping scandals in cycling. They said, we're going to show that a team can basically compete at a high level in professional cycling without doping, which means they're testing their riders every 3 or 4 days. And they started working with, say, can you help our riders maintain their peak hormonal levels? These are the riders are on, and this year they finished second after Team Astro. They've been around for 20 years. And here's their chiropractor and chief nutritionist. And again, we were blood testing these patients, these riders, to see who was peaked. Who's going to be picked to ride in the Tour de France? The blood made the choice. The blood studies that Zone Labs did on our riders prior to the Tour de France were essential to dial in the exact amount of fish oils as well as to make specific dietary recommendations for each rider. Dr. Sears and the people at Zone Labs were instrumental in helping us to create a dietary modifications for each rider. We thank them usually. Again, every athlete is genetically different. You can adjust them till now the diet is in harmony with their genes. And when it's in harmony with our genes, they perform better. And we've also basically used various universities as centers of excellence. It allows us to do a lot of testing. We've been working with the Stanford men's swim team since 1992. Now, the fact they haven't lost the Pac-10 championship since that time might be something about our diet. And also worked with my close friend at the University of Women's Volleyball team since 2002. Now, here's my other kind of, you know, pro teams, the B-2 Bomber Command. Not a lot of athletic performance, but try staying awake for 44 hours in the most cramped cockpit you can possibly think of. That's hard work. So when we talk about sports medicine, especially 21st century sports, it's, again, sports performance is all about hormonal control. And diet becomes the key component. And that high-dose fish oil, again, not for wellness now, but for performance, is key. And again, we go back to Hippocrates. Would it be sports medicine or regular medicine? It's all about basically treating food like a drug. And these are things, if I'd only known 40 years ago, I would have been a much better volleyball player. I wasn't a very good basketball player, but I was a pretty good volleyball player. But who knew? Now, with that, I'll try to give you today the overviews of, you know, of wellness and performance. And who doesn't want to basically be more well? Any hands? Okay, not too many hands going up. Anybody want to perform at the lowest possible level they possibly can? I'll say, well, of course, these rhetorical questions. Of course I want better wellness. Of course I want better performance. But you have formidable obstacles in front of you. So let me try to outline what these are so you know in advance what you're up against. Well, first of all, what's our goal? Whether it be wellness or performance? It's reestablishing harmony with our genes. Our genes still live in the Stone Age. Unfortunately, we're living in the 21st century. And that makes it harder to maintain wellness, harder to maintain performance. Our genes no longer match our environment. Our diets become more pro-inflammatory. We don't exercise enough. We have too much stress. All these have hormonal consequences that makes life a lot more difficult. But we can modify our gene expression if we choose to. That's a powerful statement. When you're exercising, you have made a conscious decision to modify the expression of your genes. When you eat, you've made a conscious decision to modify the expression of your genes. If you want to control your future, you can by controlling your genes, but you have to exercise correctly and you have to eat correctly. Now, what are the consequences if you don't? You're saying, is this too hard? Well, you're going to gain weight, get early development of chronic disease, and loss of wellness, both physical and mental.